When I was your age, I would lug 50 pounds of ice up 5-6 flights of stairs.
So what?
So what? So let's dance. I was alone. I never knew what could left me. Bah! Now, what the devil? Then we touched, then we sang about love and things. The man's a menace.
Well, holy shit, Jeffrey Paul, we're back after a three-week hiatus. How the hell are you?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, everybody.
Wow, 3 weeks, lots gone on, but let's address our guest sitting next to Jeffrey Paul, none other than Thomas Rome. Thomas,
hey,
how the hell are you, buddy?
I'm great, guys. Thank you, Jeff and Kevin. This is a privilege to be on the Sportsbook Box Office Podcast.
You're goddamn right it is, because Lenny Dykstra sat in the seat across from you as we speak of our first episode, so you are in the realm of greatness.
As Alex Rodriguez would say, it's truly a privilege, an honor, and a pleasure.
Oh, we're doing a little bit of an impression.
Oh, shtick, why not?
Thomas is a comedian, mostly in Jersey, am I correct?
Yes, I do cross the river, bridge and tunnel. I'm a bridge and tunnel comic once in a while.
Fantastic. Reason why he's here, though, is I met him at a gig, fucking 3 months ago, 4 months ago, something like that, in the winter. And I found out that Thomas, what do you prefer?
Tom's fine.
Tom's cool. Yeah. Tom is a cameraman for MLB Network, and he was kind enough to invite me to go down to the campus and check it out. Holy shit, what an amazing place. 8-year-old Kevin got a boner. It was amazing. My favorite was the wall covered in like common player baseball cards. I was like, had that guy. You know, it was just like, oh, Tony Armas Jr., Red Sox, 87 tops, had that guy. It's just down the fucking road.
Flair, Don Russ, some upper deck. Yeah, there were a couple Bowman reissues in there.
Did you ever collect the whole series, but not going out and buying the box?
No, buying the cards individually.
I did that one year, 1987.
Yeah,
the tops with the wooden board.
Yes.
Do you remember the last guy you needed?
No, not Steve Bedrosian comes
on the
mind.
Phillies.
I think so. Yes. I don't know why.
Because I remember. I had, like, everybody, you know, you get, like, quadruples of guys.
Yes.
One guy needed, I don't know if you guys remember, he was, like, a second baseman for the St. Louis Cardinals named Mike Tyson. Not the fighter, obviously.
No. What year was this, though?
This had to be 70s. I'm going to say late 70s.
Yeah, I was born in 76.
And I remember this one kid had it, and I offered him everybody, and he was just like a dick.
Because he knew that you needed that one card for the set, right?
No, he was just an asshole.
Oh.
So
clearly.
So finally, I just stole the card from him, dropped like a bunch of like Reggie Jacksons and whatever I had.
What?
I needed it. I mean, I must have
had
it.
Do you still have the set?
No, the only set I have left now is when my son was born. I went out and bought the top set. I always said I would do that, and it's still in pristine condition.
What year?
2001. So I'm sure it's worth nothing.
Way to get in and when the market – market timing is excellent.
One of my really good friends who right now works as Springsteen's road manager, he used to work for Tops. So he used to go down to spring training – and he used to go sign all these guys. So, I mean, we had a real in at Tops. But you talk about a fucking industry that's collapsed.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Oversaturated.
Yeah.
Well, that and guys grow up and go, oh, wait, pussy, and then stop collecting cards.
Yeah, you spend your money on other things.
Yeah.
But they ruined it. Between Donruss and Flair, like you were saying, it just ruined it. Because like you said, the thing to have was Tops. That should have been it.
Donruss, Fleer was more of the redheaded stepchild. Donruss was pretty good. And then Upper Deck came up, but Upper Deck was a little bit higher class.
What about Leaf? Fleer's stepsister.
That was about, one or two seasons worth of that shit?
I was like, why are they doing two of these Canadians? What are you doing?
Now, can you go to a card store now and still buy cards? Because I haven't seen them anywhere.
I have seen card stores. I haven't gone in, though, because I should out of sheer curiosity. There was a card store at my house growing up. I wanted that job so badly, they just didn't give it to me. It's like, fuck, that'd be my dream job. My brother actually got one of my dream jobs. He worked in a video rental store for years. How cool is that?
Thank you, Dante.
What's that?
Thank you, Dante.
Yeah. I'm not expected to be here.
The guy who ran the card store in my town, his backstory was he was the AT&T telephone pole guy. So he would always go up into people's attics and like hook up their cable. This is early days, all that stuff. Phone, cable, you know.
I know this is going already.
And he, instead of tips, he would say, come here, that stuff in the attic, do you want it anymore? And he built this outrageous collection by being, you know, the guy that would go up into the attic and find all that stuff. And now, all these old ladies just gave him the stuff.
Now, what are these cards worth now?
The old ones still, but I think.
Anything worth anything?
Oh God, yeah.
What's the last year?
Honus Wagner is worth like $2 million, I think. But that's the one. I know. That's like the holy grail.
I remember when I was in college, I put myself through school, right? And I had this little record store. I was inside, like kind of like a 7 day a week market. And the guy next to me stole sports memorabilia, and he was such a piece of shit. Like little kids, like, you know, 8-year-old, 9-year-old kids would come by, and he completely rip them off.
Yeah.
He take someone's like, you know, really good rookie card and everything, and, you know, give him like a bunch of like shit cards that were worth nothing collectively.
Not only did the market collapse, it was full of great people like this guy.
Right, this guy. Oh, wow. Everything about him was like low life. Even the way he ate, he would eat pizza. Keep it in his mouth and then drink coffee with it. Exactly. He was just like a nasty fucking guy. Henry, I hope you're dead.
So there's that.
Season greetings from the Sportsbook Box Office Podcast. So I'm online right now and I'm looking at one of my prized possessions because he's my all-time favorite player. A 1984 Don Mattingly Topps rookie card. Want to take a guess what people are asking for it?
Yeah.
$26.
I was going to say $6.
Six?
Yeah.
Please say 26.
180. Or asking for it.
What's the market actually bearing? There used to be a magazine.
App. Beckett's had it all the time.
Beckett's, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And you could see.
It was the Maria Bartiromo of baseball cards.
Did you guys ever go to like card shows?
Yes, all the time.
I went to two or three in my. I've soured on that real quick.
There was on my fire, like a firehouse by me that they always had. They always advertised in the back of Beckett. That's how I knew about it.
Right, and they would sometimes have like player appearances, so you get like an autograph for $15.
Oh, totally. But you compete with a lot. Again, not the best representation of humanity, you know, for the most part.
They're a step above like comic book collectors.
Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't even say they're above comic book collectors. I think comic book collectors are ahead of them.
You think that?
These days, yeah, I think the geek outdoes the sports geek. You know what I mean? The nerd, the comic nerd has more pull than the sports geek.
Yeah, now it's kind of cool to be a nerd.
Right. The explosion of internet programming and kind of all that geek, you know, the geeking out, the reemergence of Star Wars, baseball cards, it's over. Autograph balls. You know, it's for your own personal collection. I don't think
Remember when they had like department store openings? Like, I'll never forget. Dykstra came to Nobody Beats the Wiz by me. So I got him even before we knew him. And then we also had Tommy John came to the Freehold Mall and shit like that. And then I dragged my parents.
Still a good autograph to get.
Yeah, no, I haven't. It's just those are the days. Like, oh my God, Phil Rizzuto went to a card shop by me. I had my Mattingly shirt on. This is like 1990. And he's like, holy cow, right when Mattingly had a bad year, the back was really kicking. He's like, holy cow there, huh? Mattingly having a rough year. I'm like, yeah, he sure is.
Me and my friend, you know, we used to do every year. I don't know if you guys ever did this or if it was around when, you know, maybe I'm because I'm slightly older. Do you remember they used to do Yankee Fan Fest?
Yes, yep. I went. 1993.
And it was over
at the Javits. Yep.
And it was always
Tartable.
It was always in February.
Yeah.
Jesse Barfield.
And it was at the beginning.
Jimmy Key. I got.
It was the first week in February, so it was my birthday. So me and my friend, we would take off from work, and we would go down to the Yankee Fan Fest. I remember being involved in like the auctions and stuff. I got Jeter as a rookie.
They had him?
Yeah. In fact, the following year, remember how big the lines were?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we get there early, and I let this guy cut in front of me. And he's like, listen, I will get you a team autographed ball if you let me cut the line. And for some reason, I just believed him. Okay? So he takes
You're like that 8-year-old kid that guy who ate pizza and coffee was ripping off. Like, that's how naive.
Yeah, I would have been sexually molested, though. Okay? But so anyway, the guy winds up like taking my information. A few weeks later, I get an autograph, but it wasn't a team autograph. He sends me a Jeter ball, which was still pretty good, and it was legit. So I have two Jeter autograph baseballs, one signed to me and one just generic, you know, if I ever wanted to sell it.
Jeter, I met him.
I won't sell it.
I grew up in Princeton, and I went to Trenton Thunder's games, and he was playing for the Albany Colony Yankees in AA. And this was when they were – their first year Trenton Thunder with the Tigers affiliate. Tony Clark was like the big guy then. Then it was the Red Sox for a couple years, and then it was the Yankees, and it's been the Yankees since. So anyway, Jeter was in Albany Colony Yankees, and everyone, like, I got Yankee Magazine back in the day. I was like, fuck, I don't know, like 16. And everyone knew about Jeter and how great he was going to be. And I went there, and I got there, and I stalked his fucking ass with my buddy and I got his autograph. Now, my parents the next day are like, hey, this guy's in town. You want to go to the Trenton game? The doubleheader. I'm like, fuck yeah, I'll go again. And Sterling Hitchcock pitched a rehab appearance.
I have a Sterling Hitchcock pull.
So then I went there. I got Hitchcock, and I go to get Jeter again. I have the program. He looks at me and goes, hey, man. He was laughing. He's like, hey, you got me yesterday, buddy. I'm like, that's so good. Cool. Like, buddy, remember that. How many fucking people are bunched up right there, and he remembers me from yesterday? He's just like, all right, whatever.
Yeah, Jeets.
Yeah, man. And then fucking the rest is history, huh? I did, this is funny. Like I said, my all-time favorite player is Mattingly. He wrote a book, like a hitting tutorial book. It came out like 10 years ago, and I got word that he's going to be at, I don't know, some fucking place in Paramus up on Route 4. I cut work, and there was a line. There was this, I'll never forget. You talk about the old dirtbag. This guy was wearing a Don Mattingly jacket that I wore when I was in the seventh fucking grade in 1990. The guy was like 48, obviously not doing too well in life, but the line was there.
Tote bag? Those guys, a lot of those guys, tote bag is the big giveaway.
Right.
Handles. And just a big Mom's Beach tote bag, but they're in a they're in the player parking lot with the tote bag.
Oh,
that's the giveaway.
Right.
We know a guy like that.
Oh, I do. You're right. I know what you're talking about. Anyway, so then the line's creeping up, and my now wife is texting me. She's like, how are you feeling? I'm like, oh, my God, I'm fucking getting ready to hyperventilate because this is my all-time favorite guy. I cry when they lost the 95.
Five.
I was like, one of the worst days of my life when they lost that game.
So hit 400. He did
two bombs. He banged out doubles. And I was at the front. I'll tell you about this in a second.
He hit the home run at home was the best.
Game two. I was at game one. I'll tell you about that in 1 second. Let me finish the story.
Oh, hang on to the roof.
Yeah. Gary Thorne.
Oh, the best call
and
ever.
And then so my wife texts us, how are you doing? I said, oh, my God, I'm going to fucking pass out. I'm breathing. Now I know what every 10-year-old feels like to meet like fucking Justin Bieber. Like, oh my God, the picture of me, like I had a Joker smile on my face. Like, ah, it's like Donnie. It's Donnie. I talked for like 2 minutes about the – Well, yeah, and actually, some of the
were you wearing eye black?
No, yeah.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
But real quick, back to the 95 thing. My buddy got me tickets. We went to the first playoff game in fucking years, obviously. And we were in the upper deck in left field, the old Yankee Stadium. And when he came out the doors, warm up laps, I swear to Christ, I thought there was a fucking earthquake. It was like, the war and the
I know. It was outrageous.
And the place blew the. And his first. Yes, me too. Right
I'm
here.
Showing,
me too.
I'm showing Kevin and Jeff the hairs hanging, standing up on end.
When he came up for his first at bat, the place like exploded.
Yep.
Bang, hit. And then it was just. That was. And then. The day of the old – when the last day of the old stadium, they were on ESPN all fucking day, and they had all the old players in, and they asked them, what was the loudest you ever heard this? And everyone who was on that 90-ish team was like, when Mattingly came up to do warm-up laps, I'm like, I told him. You're on my wife. I said, I fucking told you. I fucking – and the guy felt like an earthquake. I said, I fucking told you there's an earthquake. I swear to Christ.
Yep.
It was amazing. I've been to an Aaron Boone game. I've been to the Piazza Clemens World Series game.
You got a pretty good resume.
I've been to 3 World Series games. I've been again the 03 ALCS, the 04 ALCS, Game 7. I've been to a lot of great games. 1995 Game 1 is my all-time favorite game I've been to.
All time,
and
I was there as well.
Oh, nice.
And I was in the right field. I was in the right field bleachers. This was early.
Section 39.
I was still in college.
Section 39.
In college.
Me too.
Yep.
Nice.
I mean, like
the roll call.
Yeah, I mean, we were in center field, but we were right next to the right field, so we were in right center. And not working. I was still in college. I had come home. I was down in Glassboro, outside Philly.
Rowan,
yes,
yuck.
Rowan University.
My brother and sister went there. Yuck, gross, Philly people.
Yes, and I had no idea that it was Philly suburb. I just went down there as a kid from North Jersey, thinking this is college. It's just New Jersey. It's got to be in New York. The Phillies were in the World Series my freshman year. It was 93. Fall of 93, I went down there. And everybody was geeking out over the Phillies. I'm like, what are you doing?
Wait, they lost in 93.
Of course they lost. That was my introduction to Philly life, like Philly suburbs.
When we had Dykstra in here, he still talks about that, and there's still bad blood between
clearly,
Dykstra
clearly.
And Williams.
And Mitch Williams,
because
yeah.
Of that.
Yeah. But is that a fire alarm or a vacuum?
Vacuum.
It's a vacuum. It's okay.
Yeah, we're
no, that's a cappuccino machine we have here in studio for our guests.
we're in the basement of the Broadway Comedy Club.
And which is a privilege. And thank you guys for having me. You got a lot of comedy stuff going on here, and this is really, really cool. So thanks again. This is really a privilege.
No problem, man. No problem.
So, question. Are you a collector? Are you a sports guy?
I mean, I'm not an active collector. My job, it clearly states on my, application, resume, and credentials. Don't, like, autographs are out. However, because I got the, you know, I'm in, there are some banquets and some other events where it is okay, where I can get it in. So I have a few of my favorites that I have collected. But, you know, like, I know people who make their basement look like a sports bar. Mine looks pretty cool, but it's not my A number one hobby. But I won't turn down a good opportunity, but I have to be careful of when I pick those opportunities.
What's your best autograph?
Yeah.
I got two Koufax baseballs.
Sweet. Yeah, that's a great one.
I have two Koufax baseballs on separate occasions. I have Hank Aaron. I have Willie Mays.
And by the way, how was the quality of that autograph?
Willie can't see by the time he got to me. However,
and he also was very shaky, so it's a bad autograph. Now.
But these are like, and then the thing with Willie too was, and this is special.
Where'd you get it?
My opportunity in Cooperstown.
That's
you got to go up for you go up there. You can clean up for as a collector
at the place across from the Hall of Fame. I think you know that corner place.
Mickey's. Right. Mickey's place is where Willie does his thing.
All the great jerseys are.
Correct. They're all great shops. Those shops are
there.
But anyways, because I'm a cameraman, there are a couple photographs that I have, scrapbook types, that are me working, you know, holding the camera and shooting something happening, a behind-the-scenes shot. And one of them is me shooting Willie Mays. After he autographed my baseball, I was like, Mr. Mays, I just wanted to show you this. Would you mind? He autographed that picture for free. So I have a picture of me working with Willie Mays.
Sweet.
At the All-Star game, signed by Willie Mays, hanging in my house. Done. Check it off the list. That picture will – it's once I saw that picture, I said, I got to get it signed. I got it signed. He was great.
Let's get into that for a second. How did you get started as a cameraman? How long have you been doing it, and how long did you get started?
I was always a – I'm a movie buff, comedy buff.
Oh, you're perfect for this show.
Storyteller. In so many ways. I play in a bar band. You know what I mean? I just like – entertainment. I love the Muppet Show. I love you know what I mean?
Who doesn't?
Right. Growing up, and that's what we, you know, that's what
you
it was.
You communist fuck, Jeffrey Paul, raising your hand. He hates the Muppet Show.
Yeah. I hate the Muppet
but
Show.
But it's just,
of course
just
fun. That's why.
But variety acts of all kinds, I've always gravitated toward entertainment and goofing off, really. Class clown, that kind of thing. But video was a way, my parents had a VHS camera. So I was making movies in my backyard. I made Indiana Jones when I was 13 years old. I had the hat, the whip, and I was pulling my brother's heart out in front of my cousin, and we had lava.
Where'd you get the camera from?
It was my dad's camera. He was like, here, go ahead. First night, I broke the tripod. And then I never broke anything after that. But the first night I broke the tripod, and I was like, he's going to kill me. And he never asked for anything back. I ended up shooting everything for the rest of our lives. You know, and still to this day, I just.
Did you have to go to school to do this?
That's where I went to Rowan. Because I was involved in all this stuff, high school theater and those kinds of things. I went to college thinking I was going to be a theater major. And I
were on the stage or were you
I was on the stage. I was on the stage. And then I was like, you know what?
I'm straight. Never mind.
The elf boots and the capes and the Dungeons and Dragons. I was like, I can't. If I leave here, if I spend 4 years here and study
where'd you go to high school?
And I don't get a job. I can't be. And no disrespect, I've done all those jobs. I was a cook through college. I was a waiter.
Where did you grow up though? Where were you in high school?
Bergen County, right over the bridge.
In Jersey.
Yeah, I went to Don Bosco All Boys. Parochial high school.
Were you all time great high school?
Right,
football
with all boys. Sure. Catholic high school, and then I went to Rowan, which is like the DMV of public colleges. It was a very eye opening experience. In the suburbs of Philadelphia.
What a drop off.
Oof.
Yeah, you go from up there to wearing hoodies in the fucking bar. Gross.
You know, but, you know, it was college. And at that point, I changed majors. And I went fully into studying the camera, doing editing, and all that behind the scenes and production stuff. Because I was like, if I'm not going to perform, and they don't pick me out of a chorus line, I don't want to continue to cook at the Ground Round and the Olive Garden. But I was done in college.
You knew
cooking.
You didn't want to be have an office job. You knew you didn't want to do that.
Correct. Right. Yeah. I knew storytelling in some way or form, or you know, entertainment in some way was going to be my. And I was always a sports fan. So my first job out of college was weddings, bar mitzvahs. Just every Saturday in a tuxedo. All my buddies are down the shore.
Were you working
just like,
for somebody, or were you?
No,
on
I was working for somebody too, and that was. I learned, you know, the school of hard knocks, the school of real life. During that time, and I was like trying to do stand up, and I had done a couple, you know, commercials, but it was a hustle. It was so hard, and these weddings were burning me out. But I learned, if I ever lose a battery, if I ever run out of tape, or if I ever find new lighting, or if I ever have a bad microphone, it's all happened at a wedding. So before I got into sports, which by the year 2000, I worked in the elevator at Yankee Stadium. clip-on tie, like, what floor, Mr. Steinbrenner? And I was like, I got to get out of here. So I kept handing out resumes to camera people. And I eventually found the camera guy from Major League Baseball Productions. And I was like, they have that? That's the NFL films of Major League Baseball. I would love that. And they're like, yeah, we make This Week in Baseball. I'm like, oh, my other favorite show growing up.
Yeah.
So then I started with them, and they were like, your first job is watching the tapes and writing down what happens. It's being a logger.
Where'd you, and that goes data entry.
And then
where did you do that?
That was in Moonaki. Like, they had, like,
sure, yeah,
and then
yeah.
it blew up, and then it went to Chelsea Market. Right. And that's where MLB.com is now. But we were the productions company, and it was awesome. We were the official film, like, specialty shit.
How long did you do that?
The high-end looking stuff. Manfred changed the business model. Like, when a new commissioner comes in, all these all these leagues reshuffle. And then we got blended in. People from our group got blended into the network, so now I continue with the network.
How long were you a blogger for?
Oh, I was a logger for, like, 2 years.
Well,
blogger. So, like, a blogger has more respect.
No, they don't.
You're logging this stuff in.
Yeah, but I also have the skills to shoot.
Is the pay good? Because I heard the pay is not that good.
No, it wasn't. You had to want it. You know, you had to want to do this. And like I said, after being a waiter and a cook and a wedding videographer and just wanting to just do baseball instead, any capacity, I ate it for 2 years. I rode the bus
to my dad's house. Was it enough to live on?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you lived at your parents' house. Yeah,
25 grand a year, right. we get it, between the lines, and you're like
26 or 27 years old.
Yeah.
But I was going to the ballpark, and then they were like, we need a second camera. And I was like, I'm your guy. I own a camera because I had bought one to do more weddings for more. You know, at that point, I could do them with my eyes closed. But I was using that stuff for baseball, and it was getting my resume built with baseball. They eventually were like, full time, you're in. And from 2004,
so you went from logging
to, like, second camera guy to editor to helper.
Who tabbed you for that?
You got to keep hustling. They pick you. It's like a, you know, it's, you earn your next spot, and then you earn your next spot, usually season by season. So by the after the World Series, they're like, okay, here's your deal for next year. You're good, or you're going home. And, like, I think my first year, I worked at Arthur's because I had I got sent home. Yeah, in Hoboken.
That.
I was living in Hoboken. Yeah, so I was like, I got to sling steaks for 3 months. Spring training, start logging again, and I was like, I can't fuck it up, you know, because the baseball was better than the steaks. And then I never stopped.
When's the first time you're on the field?
Yeah, totally. I know what you mean, Jeff. Yeah.
Okay, what's your first time getting on?
Really
the field?
Doing it? I think it was a Miguel Tejada with my camera. It was a Miguel Tejada shoot. The show is all in Spanish. It was called Sabora Baseball, and it had this girl from the Dominican Republic, and she was the host, and Tejada was on the A's, and it was 2002, and he came to Yankee Stadium, and I did the second camera, and then we finished the show, and my boss actually said, and he didn't know who shot it, he was like, the second camera stuff looked great, do that again, and I was like, awesome. Nice. And I was still hustle for that show. I was the PA on that show, so I'd work like 70 hours a week in Chelsea Market, watching games, clipping stuff off, helping. They're like, okay, we're shooting. I'm like, all right, let's go out to the stadium, go back, stay up all night, edit. Saturday, the show.
Let's pause for 1 second here.
Yeah.
If someone's listening here, we have a young listening ship. Just kidding. if we have any listenership, I'd be surprised. If we have someone listening going, damn, that was the dream for me. That is the dream to be in sports broadcasting. How would one go about doing it?
Yeah, you have to.
You just said it.
Yeah, yeah.
He just said the story.
You're
no,
right.
He said his story. He didn't say, like, what's the way to do it
now. The way to do it.
But that's the thing. I guess to say the route that I took was I had a diploma, the 4 year college, radio, TV, film. You know, so I liked all those things. I love Howard Stern. I love Mike and the Mad Dog. I love movies. I love TV. You know what I mean? So I was fine if I could pick a gig in any of those things. But the Yankee Stadium job was in the elevator, clip-on tie, $75 a game, 1999, 2000, and 2001. And by 2001, I was done. And they were only work at home games, so you could only get 80 gigs.
Yeah.
So it's 75 times 80. It's a total part-time job. Yeah, playoffs too. And then so you had to have something else. You had to be flexible. You know, so I would edit and whatever, and then I get on the train at like 3:30 or 3:45 from Chelsea to get up to Yankee Stadium by like 5 o'clock.
Now, are you on the road now?
I do travel. I've traveled. I got a pretty good travel. A lot of it's domestic, so I don't rack up miles to Cincinnati and Kansas City. But
have you been to every stadium?
I've been to every stadium except two. I haven't been to Milwaukee, and I haven't been to Oakland.
You know what? Those are two probably not good for us.
I heard
Oakland, I heard, is good. Milwaukee, not so much. It's disgusting what I've heard.
The best gigs are, and it maybe going back to autographs even too, I mean, just the best baseball trip or the best. Don't snooze on spring training. Spring training is a great trip.
I go almost every year.
Grab your golf clubs, grab your buddies, whatever. I mean, yeah. Don't bother going to Florida. Go to Arizona. I mean,
I'm always in Florida. I'm always in Florida.
But go, yeah. 1 year, go to Arizona because Scottsdale is gorgeous. There's a ton of baseball out there, and there's good restaurants, and everyone's beautiful, and the cars are awesome, and they have casinos.
Oh, now you're talking.
Yeah, don't go to Phoenix. Don't get fooled by Phoenix. Scottsdale spring training is could be – it's a –
And there's – I think there's stand-up Scottsdale there too.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's there. It's just a cool – city, a cool scene. They got like art and music, and you know, you can even go with your family. I mean, I got three kids now, so if I ever go to Scottsdale again, I would totally, my wife would just walk around, push a stroller, and like they would just love it. So,
now, is your wife working or no?
She's a school teacher, yeah, she's a public school teacher, teaches first grade.
I was gonna say, that's gotta be tough. You
totally
on the road,
World Series is the toughest, yeah. No, I totally get, I love these are the best questions because it's totally true. You guys. Like,
well, we're family guys. We're comics.
Yeah.
We travel.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a lot of the same thing. But, I mean, talking about, you know, baseball season of all the sports is the most extended between spring training and the World Series. You really got
maybe 2.5 months off.
Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, you got to take the practical side of it because at the beginning, after the euphoria wears off, it's, you know, it becomes a job.
I fly commercial. I carry all my stuff. That camera's 28.5 pounds, you know, like.
Right.
And everybody's like, this is great. And I'm like, I'm starving. My wife wants me home. The kids are, where are you? I root for the last couple of years for the team that wins game one of the World Series because I want them to win the next three straight. The drama means I don't get paid a dollar extra for game seven extra innings.
Right.
I did love it last year. Don't get me wrong. Last year was outrageous.
But if
I had to tap out, that could be the last, you know, that could be close the book on the World Series. What happened last year was,
okay.
If you had to.
So you interact with these guys, everything. Who's the biggest dick you've ever
come across?
That
was my first question.
I know you, it was.
I don't want one. I want five. Fuck one.
Let's go one at a time. Let's go your top five biggest dicks.
A-Rod's got to be in there.
I don't think he is. I think he's.
I met him.
He doesn't like dudes. He doesn't like dudes with cameras.
See, there you go. I was right.
Yeah, and I'm both of those. That's just what I don't think. He's never been a particular dick to me, but I've never felt warmly greeted by him at any time. Jeter, on the other hand, I worked with. I did that HBO. Cheater 3000 documentary.
Yeah.
I shot all that stuff. It was a 10-day gig. We did the Trenton when he rehabbed in Trenton. Mm-hmm. We did the calf injury, and then he hit the homer. But I think the whole span, it was like 10 days. I think it was on the road for like 12 days. And I saw him. I was in Cuba with the Rays, and he was sweet. Down. Wow. Yeah, totally cool.
Wow, what a great experience.
And I saw him at this. So
is he
such
a dick,
right?
Brothel?
No.
Is he a
not
dick
at all.
Or is he not a dick?
No, not at all. Actually, get this. Jimmy Buffett played a private party for like 200 people, and Jeter was there. I got to go. The Tampa Bay Rays were there, and I saw Jeter, and he was like, what's up? And he's like totally like, you know, bro hugged. He didn't call me by my first name. He didn't say come to my house, but he was, you know, in that scene was, you know, responsive in a friendly way.
I'll take I'll take places I'll never see Derek Jeter for 200. It'll be that place.
Answer the question now. Five dicks.
All right, let's see.
I've got.
Yeah, I don't know who's gonna hear this. I don't know.
Nobody.
There's some other dicks.
Yeah, no one
like,
listens.
Like some
no
PR guys. Some PR guys are dicks. Like you gotta
go
PR
players.
Guys.
Players.
You want players?
Yeah.
We want to hear. Hey,
I don't know.
All right, A-Rod. I'll tell you this about A-Rod.
Jay Horowitz. He's an asshole, right? Who cares? Who cares? Brian Cashman's an asshole, right? Who cares?
The only PR guy you know is Jay Horowitz.
Yeah.
And Rick Cerrone for the Yankees. Thank you.
He was a dick. He doesn't work there anymore, but he was a huge dick.
Yeah.
That guy, I went to St. Louis one time, and then we were doing, after the Yankees Red Sox, they were like rivalry, rivalry, rivalry. We made all these documentaries about Yankees Red Sox. Like, we beat it to death on ESPN, and then like all these.
I hate to tell you, it never was a rivalry. It was so one sided. It's not a rivalry. It has to be equal to a rivalry. Thank you.
So we made all these documentaries, and I think it was 2005, and when the Yankees played the Cardinals. I went out to St. Louis. And
nice.
That was like, yeah, and there was the night where like Giambi was out all night with like Piazza. And then they threw the ball around the infield in game one. It was like 4-0 before anybody got out. And the next day I got to go see Rick Cerrone. I'm like, hey, Rick, about those interviews. And he's like, what the fuck. And he's like, you fucking, I can't believe you're fucking. I was laughing because I was like, is this guy serious? Because he goes, I'm like, it's that documentary about the Red Sox. He goes, you think we want to talk about the fucking Red Sox? We're in fourth fucking place. Nobody here gives a shit about the Red Sox. I swear to God, I'm quoting you. That's me, him, dugout at like 1:15 for a 7 o'clock game. And I'm like, I got to call the office. And I'm like, I don't know if we're going to get those interviews that we needed. Like,
you know what, Tom? That's not a player.
Okay, yeah, yeah, right.
He was a player.
That was fun to do, though.
Is that the same Rick?
No.
It's Rick Cerrone?
Yeah, no,
he was the catcher.
No, he spells his name with one R. The other guy is two R's.
Gummy.
Oh, please.
And I'm always saying
even I knew that. And you're a Yankee fan.
He ripped me a new asshole for trying to do my job.
Fuck him.
Yeah. A-Rod, one time we had him wired up because we told him we were doing the A-Rod Yankeeography, right?
Yeah.
And you got to watch it again. It is cringe. It is cringe sports television.
You guys should re-edit and cut him going to fucking Francesa's studio and crying for an hour and a half on the air.
The other cringe sports television is the Roger Clemens ESPN 2003 documentary.
Oh, my God. Roger Clemens is in the building.
We did both of those.
Oh, wait. The Susan Waldman thing?
Yeah.
Susan Waldman thing is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Brian McNamee is in his house giving him breakfast. Posada. Every day.
So Posada knew it. On the railing.
Scrub it up, date John, brought to you by Benny Hanna for the Japanese dining experience. Go to Benny Hanna, BennyHanna.com.
English leather for all men.
Anyone give you a hard time? Anyone particularly nasty?
Stop it. Aubrey
Huff. Aubrey Huff,
really?
Prick.
Come on, bro.
First baseman. Tampa Bay. Yeah. I was at the,
And Giants. Yeah. He won with the Giants, and he was just a total prick.
I was at the game.
Why?
Yeah. I don't know. You know what? Just a lot of this, some of these dudes, like, who may not have been stars, but were in the league for 12 years, 11 years,
career.
10 years. They get
Orioles too.
They get like seniorship in the clubhouse, but you wouldn't really recognize. Like, fans don't normally recognize. They're like, the best player is the leader, and that's not always the case.
No.
It's like the guy who's got the most years in his belt, and some quiet guy off the bench, and he's like, you know, just this important guy or whatever. But and he's like, fuck the media, fuck those cameras, fuck those guys, and was like, and now he's standing there with the microphone in the heat. You know, loving life because I'm working in sports television, but this guy just made it.
All right, so Aubrey Huff's number one. Give me four more.
Well, A-Rod, I think he's trying to clean it up, but I never had a great experience with him. You know, the Good Morning America.
The thing is, that's too obvious a target. I like the Aubrey Huff one.
No, I have.
So we're going to nix
A-Rod,
and let's go. You still owe us
four more.
I don't think you can nix A-Rod. Let's see. I will say this. I don't want to speak ill of the deceased.
You sure can. they can't sue.
This guy was grumpy. I won't say he was but Bob Feller was a very interesting, really interesting guy.
Threw a fastball faster than motorcycle.
Exactly. And people would ask him, like, Bob, what's the greatest game you ever won? And he'd be like, World War II when we beat the Japs.
I love that answer. Yeah, I love that answer.
The Japs, yeah. He said, like, he'd say that right now if he was still.
He's an old guy.
Gramps?
Yeah. Yeah. He joined after Pearl Harbor. He went to the Navy.
Right.
Like, yeah. And he was like, the guys on the ship, when they would pass the Pacific, they'd take coconuts and leave them in the boiler room of the ship because the coconuts would ferment, and then they could get drunk. They couldn't bring booze back on the ship, but they were just like, I could die at any moment.
Yeah. That Juan Marichal was some heck of a spick, but he can play ball.
He's one of the good ones.
Yeah. Jackie was a racist.
And that Jew.
No.
Hank Greenberg.
Never once an anti-Semitic word. He didn't love Jackie Robinson. He was a little
surprise.
But
we didn't want any coon ruining the game.
He didn't. He was grumpy. I say.
All right, Bob Feller number two.
You know who he hated? Lawyers. He definitely. I hate lawyers.
Well there goes the two thing.
Who doesn't?
Who else? Let's see.
Three more. Don't say Don Mattingly. I'll kill him.
No way. No. Never. Even if he could slap me in the face.
Horace Clark.
No.
Felix Mian.
No.
Felix Fermin.
Let's see. Oh, awesome dude.
No, we don't awesome dude. We went asshole. Griffey Jr., dickhead or not?
A good question. Thank you. No, good, decent cool. dude. Yeah, he's decent dude.
He could go either way, though,
I
think.
Yeah, he doesn't really, like, love the media, but then, like, off camera, he won't shut up. Like, he's really, like,
how about
he's like,
Gene?
Hey, look at these pictures of my kid. Like, and he'll talk to you for 10 minutes, you know, on your pictures of
so
his
you
kid.
Were, you were in
and
the
then you're like,
room?
Hey, can we do this interview? And he's like, man, screw off. Like, you're like, what?
Were you in the locker room with them also?
I have been in the clubhouse, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who had the biggest cock?
I really haven't.
Of course you would want to know that.
Well, according to Dystra.
Oh, yeah, he said Strawberry had a fucking swamp mule. That's what he called it, swamp mule.
And he talks about it all the time.
Jeff asked him to draw a diagram just for the scale,
yeah,
by the way.
I just wanted to say one.
All right.
For comparison reasons.
Besides Edgar Martinez, who else? No, I'm just making that up. Jay Buhner sounded like a dick.
Well, Randy Johnson was...
Yes, easily.
Stories yeah. about him are legendary.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's grumpy and guarded, but he was a dick when he was playing. I did that thing with him and Rush. He loves the band Rush, and he's a photographer.
Yuck.
Love, you don't like Rush?
No, you're an asshole. Like
this is great radio.
Morrissey
this
shirt.
Is great radio.
Right. So why?
Morrissey's boring.
I can listen to one band?
No, they're bad. They're
kill
boring.
Yourself. I love
boring.
Rush.
But anyways...
See, you don't know music.
I do know music. I know Rush is bad.
Randy has a...
Who's your band?
Who's my band? I have a ton of bands.
I like Guns N' Roses and Welcome to the Jungle is my favorite song.
It is not
because they never
song.
Play it on the radio. Kill yourself with that one, too. Paradise City. Get
keep
out of
going.
Here.
Keep trying.
Rush is
I love
a
watching
great
you grasp for
band.
Sure.
Randy Johnson was great. Was Getty gives Randy a credential and says, you're my photographer. And then Randy shoots these awesome pictures. So I was there to shoot and produce and orchestrate this meeting and videotape them interviewing each other about this whole thing and how they have this mutual respect for each other, how Randy loves the music.
Two of the ugliest people taking pictures of each other in the world. Randy Johnson had a fucking fire in his face that he put out a pitch for.
And I'm tasked with the job of making it look good for television. So we do this whole shoot, and then we stay for the concert, and then after the concert, Randy's like all sweaty, and I got to go up to this guy. He's 6'11". Sweating, he's
mullet.
Got all this he's got all this camera gear on him, and I'm like, Randy, I'm tasked with the job of reaching out because we did this Randy Johnson documentary for
were
the
you
network.
Were you intimidated?
Yeah, he was that kind. Yeah. You know? And now this is only like 2 or 3 years ago, so I've been doing this a long time, but okay. I don't normally, I'm just the camera guy, so a lot of times I don't have to do all the convincing. Right. This time I did, and it was him at Rush. Like I just walked past Neil Peart, and I'm like. A drummer like that was I just saw him warming up and I was backstage with him like that moment will never
could be the best drummer ever
to be shoulder to shoulder with him backstage was really amazing. And then on my way to walk and try and convince Randy Johnson to do a 1 hour documentary that he knows nothing about, like I have to ambush question him. I'm like, hey Randy, so we're working on this thing, and he's like, talk to Mark. he sounds like somebody from Star Wars. He's like
Vader.
Yeah, he's like, talk to my agent on tell him. I forget what his agent was. He's like, all of this stuff. I mean, he looked me hard. He was like, all of this stuff goes through my agent, and then he's like started to look away, and I'm like, I know, but he hadn't called us back, so I just wanted to say thanks for a great day, blah blah blah, but it broke the ice. And he did the show.
By the way, he sounds exactly like Jesse Ventura, or your impression does.
No. I could. You know what?
I'll do voices in your act, do you?
I do some voices. I don't do that one.
You are. You're welcome. All right. Gary Sheffield seems like a dickhead. True or false? Complete asshole.
I bet in the day, I never really worked with him during the peak of his playing days. Posada. Oh, Varitek.
Asshole.
Varitek.
Fuck him.
Varitek. Dude, we had this kid from the library, the videotape library, which is like, it's not even,
his
it's like less.
Supposedly loved him.
They did. He was captain for years.
And the teammates loved the Aubrey Huff.
Not the best player.
And they loved the Aubrey Huff. Again, not the best player.
Because he could call a game. He hit like 180, but he called the game. That's why
he was clutch.
Yeah, so we had this kid from the library, which is like the second entry level position to video logger. And he's a kid from Massachusetts, and he's like, just. Floored. We need your help. Just carry batteries and shit. Get on the field. So now he's on the field, totally like starstruck, deer in the headlights, old Yankee Stadium, Yankees Red Sox 03. Backpack on, like just waiting for to give somebody a tape.
Great time to be involved in Yankee Red Sox.
I mean, and Varitek comes out to throw. And they throw near the batting cage. So I think a cameraman was shooting batting practice, and I was shooting batting practice, but Varitek comes out, and this kid's, like, just standing there. And then Varitek just comes up, get the fuck off the field. And the kid was like, Varitek's his favorite player. Kid grew up Red Sox fan. Varitek's his favorite
player.
Not
anymore.
Never meet your heroes.
Get the fuck off the field. And then the kid goes, well, I'm with Major League Baseball Productions. And he goes, I don't care if you're the fucking commissioner. Get the fuck off the field. He starts to play and catch.
What a red ass. Yeah. Two more names we got for you, Thomas. Tom Rowan. Let's go. Two more names.
Oh, man. Right now, Pujols is not – he's never in a good mood. Real early, 2002, did a shoot with Pujols. Nicest guy
St. Louis.
Going. He was at Yankee Stadium. He was talking about his bobblehead and his son, and, like, he was doing this charity stuff, and he would do all these interviews. Like, he was only a rookie in 01.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was the shit. And then he got burnt out real quick, or just somebody burned him, and anyone with a camera or anyone asking for his time is just like, grrr.
Well, it's funny. I watched the highlights of him hitting his 600th last night, and the guy who caught the ball gave it to him.
Why don't people do that?
And Pujols is giving him a hug, but it's kind of like you're hugging your, you know, the guy you don't like in the office. Like, all right, see you later.
Of course.
The fucking half-ass. I'm like, you motherfucker. Like, I would ask like 50 grand. You can kiss this shit goodbye.
You got to hold on to that ball a little bit.
Yeah,
and the kid did it for Jeter.
Yeah.
And then
he got tickets.
But then he had to pay the taxes on the tickets. Take the ball and walk away.
Sell
These
it.
Guys don't give you anything. No. Why would you give them the ball? Yeah. And I understand the sentimentality, but you're holding.
You got to give them the ball back. You can't hold on.
$30 million
a
year. You can pay 50 grand
get the
for
money.
A fucking ball.
Right. Then
well, Gita's got to do the right thing by him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any player does.
No, you have to ask them. But if you don't ask them, they're not going to give it to you. None of these guys ask them.
Gita would have fucked him. He would have gotten a gift bag. All right. There you go.
Are you still doing second camera?
I know I've graduated beyond second camera.
So you're now first camera.
I
didn't know we were in the presence of greatness.
Hold on. We got one more name to get out of time here before we go to the next subject. One more name.
Let's see. John Mellencamp?
He's not a ball player. Let's try
he's
again.
A he's a dick, dude. He had to sing the national anthem
surly.
In that year, right?
Awful.
Oh, have you heard? He's he is.
You say surly?
Oh, he's he was supposed to sing the national anthem. Tigers
Padres?
You can make up any
World
team
Series.
We wouldn't give a shit.
No, you don't give a shit. Okay, never mind. Let's see who else.
The Tigers played the Padres and then they also played St. Louis?
The Tigers lost to the Giants.
They lost to the Giants.
That was before Sandy. I couldn't get home because the World Series ended as Sandy was hitting Newark.
Right.
So I went to San Francisco and shot the parade instead because it was either that or stay in Detroit.
Bye, honey. Good luck.
Ride a bus.
hope you don't float away.
I only had two kids at the time, so I only feel 67% as bad as I would right now.
You're shooting the parade, and your wife's holding onto a fucking floating door down Main Street.
And I'm writing math jokes right now, which just never work.
Math jokes don't
never work.
One more name. Let's go.
Let's see.
Jonathan Papelbon.
No, you know what? I did a good shoot with him. He was right with me. No, I think he's behaved pretty well.
I don't like him. Like the theatrics.
I had like a Bobby Cox get the fuck out of here moment. You know, I've had a couple of those.
How about Chipper Jones?
Oh, you know, Dick Williams, total dick.
Oh, well,
total
there
dick.
You go. It's
total
in the name.
He just died.
A couple years ago, three or four years ago, I think. But it was grumpy as hell. We did this documentary on the 84 Padres, right? Which the documentary was Triumph and Tragedies. And it highlighted all these teams that had victories.
Garvey was on that team, right?
DeGarve, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And Gwynn.
Right. So was Lyman Bostock, I think? Or No.
Do you remember how died, Lyman Bostock?
Yeah, he got shot. There was one of their teammates. Kevin Shaw?
The pitcher,
I
think kills himself.
Eric Shaw
kills himself. Like if you look at that team, there's like three premature deaths, but they won the pennant.
Oh, we see. There's Alan Wiggins.
Wiggins, right? Exactly. Right. Yes, these sad stories, but wrapped in this, you know, victorious thing. So that was the documentary, kind of this conundrum.
What's the name of the documentary?
Triumph and Tragedy, and they did one on
really good.
Yeah, and they did another one on. I think they're going to do one on like the 77 Yankees, and they did another one.
They should do one on the Angels.
Oh, Donnie Moore?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But Dick Williams was the manager. And I don't know if this makes him a dick. Oh, Earl Weaver.
Oh, I can see him being a complete asshole.
I did a shoot with him in his house. Man, he didn't like that. I fucking, like, rearrange his kitchen to, like, you know, I put up a green screen.
Don't touch that faggot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Give me a couple guys, nicest guys in the world. Who are your favorites?
Sean Casey.
Okay, he's on the network now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, any of those guys on the network now are really cool.
He's from South Jersey, too.
Chris Rose?
Chris Rose is a nice guy. Kevin Millar is a great guy.
Even with his frosted tips.
CC Sabathia is a really nice guy.
That's what I hear.
I met him. I was doing commercials for the Indians, and he was a rookie in 04.
Right.
So I met him when he was like 21 years old like that.
And you remember, like, they, I don't know if they still do it. You probably know better than I do. They still do the Hall of Fame game up there.
Yeah. You gotta look it up on the site.
I remember going, and CC, he wasn't even called up to the Indians yet. He pitched that game that I
won. Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's great. Have you ever been to Double Day Field?
I haven't been there.
No, you never been to Cooperstown?
No.
No, you can take your wife and daughter.
No, fuck that. My brother and I are going to go. No, stop it. My brother and I are going to go when Mariano goes in.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
You better go make a reservation
now.
I know.
Make it now.
I'm going. Oh, yeah,
we'll go. And you could stay.
Those 2 years are going to be insane up
you
there.
I know. That's why we're going to Mariano, because Jeter's being crazier than that.
You could stay at the there's a Holiday Inn, but it's like 4 miles out of town. And they don't have Uber up there, so it totally fucking blows. Like, if you're going to get banged up in Cooperstown and stay at that Holiday Inn, which is the most normal hotel up there.
They have Uber.
They don't. No, I was just up there.
I'm up there every year.
On the holidays, maybe seasonal, because I went up off-season. I do
shows up there. I stay outside, say about 20 minutes outside in, Cherry Valley.
Okay.
Okay. In fact,
well, you're educating me, so that's great, Jeff. I got boned. I had to...
In fact, if you ever get up there, and you can stay at the it's called the Limestone Manor. I stay up there, and usually it's like Guidry's with us.
Oh yeah, Gator.
Louis Tian.
He's in a Lightning.
A bunch of the old Yankees. They come in and they stay, and we all have like breakfast there. Oh. It's a very cool place to stay. Quick question though.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, Mr. First Camera. Okay.
Guilty as charged.
Head fluffer too, by the way.
What was the best or coolest thing that you ever like were
captured,
but didn't air because it was just, you know, a little fucked up?
Interesting. I guess I got to go to the Dominican Republic and like shoot in those, like, where these really poor players come from. So like there's burning garbage and like. Like, you remember, like, I went to Catholic school, and they would pass around a metal globe.
Bosco.
Yeah, and then you'd put change in it, and then there'd be pictures of people suffering far, far away. These were those people. Some of them turn into Big Poppy. Some of them turn into, you know, Christian Guzman, you know, and some of them, you know,
Christian
just turn.
Guzman.
And some of them turn to, you know, just a moped and, like, five kids with, you know, four different women, you know, like, and just burn out. But a lot of them, they just like single moms who like sell fruit for like a quarter a day, you know, and then a lot, just some of them are just like, they'll just go and play baseball every day. Some like left-handed kid who's like 14 years old, is like 6 foot, just throws seeds. They just baby this guy and try and get him like out of the island. And you watch, and it starts on playgrounds, and then it goes to academies, and then they, you know, baby these guys and try and, you know, try and get them to
the best game you ever were at.
But what is,
hold on
what
a second. Hold
are
on,
you
Jeff,
filming?
Hold on, Jeff. Hold on.
So I was there like in the homes, you know, like a hot plate, like, and then the kid like goes, you know, we do documentaries on him and stuff like that. I mean, if you're asking about like secrecy stuff or across the line, how about going back to that Clemens show? That guy Brian McNamee, who he testified against, like almost not knowing, is in his house every day. In the show, he's making him breakfast. Brian McNamee makes Roger Clemens breakfast every day in this show and is, like, interviewed in the program as his trainer, like, as his confidant, like, as, like, his other teammate. Like, me and Mac do the seal deal, and he does all these push-ups and all this stuff. It's like, but he's not injecting you? Like, why is he lying about that part? Like, it wasn't on TV. I didn't see that. But everything else that McNamee says is in a show. It's in a TV show.
I just wanted to make sure I didn't get caught. I was once at a Yankee-Red Sox game, pennant race. I'm with this girl. She worked for Saturday Night Live. She gets us like amazing tickets. And during the game, she's giving me a handy.
I didn't film that.
Right. So I just want to know. I just want to make sure I didn't get caught.
No.
So I don't know if anything ever went through the rounds. You know, your cameraman buddies. Hey, did you catch that guy with the girl with the big tits?
Okay. Yeah. If I work with a lot of dudes.
That would have been me.
The best ever was a guy and girl in the top in Florida. Like, I don't know how fucking long ago it was. There, she was full on riding on the fucking seat. It was on SportsCenter, the whole deal.
I thought that was Philly.
No, it was Florida.
Come on, make it Philly.
And Toronto had a big one.
Don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Because they had the hotel.
Yeah, that's another one.
Nice. Yeah,
so,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, people be fucking and leaving the windows open.
I would so do that.
Yeah.
All right, listen, what best game you've ever were at?
Might be game 7 this year. It was 67 degrees for the World Series last year. It went extra innings. I was already there. All right. I knew I had a ticket home the next day. So no matter what, I was going. Other than that little bit of rain.
Yeah.
That kind of delay. Yeah. But Jason Hayward gives a big speech, whatever. But the
he had to do something.
The Rajay Davis home run was outrageous. That was I was out. Bill Murray was right behind me. Bill Murray was like right behind me for actually all week.
He was legit, huh?
Yeah, he was really legit. He was really, yeah, both like really, really legit.
You talked to him?
I did. Real brief. Just, you know, those guys, they were very busy. You know, like I get a little starstruck or whatever, but also when you're working, it's different. You know what I mean?
Starstruck by, Murray or Vetta?
Bill Murray. Okay. Bill Murray.
Easily.
Yeah. No, I mean, just – I'm a Saturday Night Live fan, you know, just going back to what we talked about before.
Caddyshack.
I mean, Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
You know.
All right.
Yeah.
That's all the opening of this show.
That's it is. It is the opening of this show. Let's do some sports book box office or movie game here. I don't know. So this is what we do. We like to have we guess the opening box office grosses of films every week, and then we compare our results, and we bet for nothing. So let's just go over a few from the last few weeks. Sheriff DePaul, you got the numbers there, buddy?
Of course I do.
You're a good citizen. We have about 3 weeks worth because we've been out because of Memorial Day. So here we go.
It's only six movies.
Yeah, it is. And I think I've got one, two, three. I got six, yes. Yeah,
and when we look at it, we're going to be embarrassed.
I don't know. We're going to see. Okay,
yeah,
so.
Okay. You'll see.
Alien. Oh, wow. Alien Covenant, the sequel to Prometheus, budget 97, came in at an astoundingly low $36 million. Where do we stand, Jeffrey Paul?
Okay, so we also had, do you know Vincent James?
Comic,
very
Vinny
very
James.
very funny guy.
No, I haven't met him yet.
Yeah, he did the game with us, so he really didn't have high expectations for this movie. He picked 21. I had very high expectations for movies. I thought it opened up bigger, 75.
Yeah,
Kevin went with 44.
It looks like I win then. With 36.
You're the closest.
What, closest without going over, or just the closest?
Yeah, no Price is Right.
Oh, no, just
come closer. On down.
But yeah. None of us were really.
Yeah,
you
that
really
was
were able to gauge
the
that.
Soft win. All right, next one. Yeah. Diary of a Wimpy Kid Part 2, the film that no one gave a fuck about. Budget $22 million. Jeffrey Paul, what are the numbers?
Okay, we're going to go. Vincent James had high expectations for this movie.
He's so positive in everything he fucking does.
He also just had a kid.
He's
so
irrational.
He's all in that. So he went with $32
million. Jesus.
I thought
do people go to movies like that anymore? Not like,
no, but yeah. I thought people would go see it.
They're all down. All the numbers
because
are down.
Because
they're terrible. They're bad films this summer.
But I thought like junior high schoolers would go. So I went 21. You went with 11.
Two for two. $7 million.
Yeah, I say eight. Can I play? Can I just...
No, these are 3 weeks old, buddy.
No, it happened already.
Yeah.
Oh, but I have no idea. I haven't plugged in.
You'll jump in.
You're going to be in the next group of
movies.
Okay,
no, then I'll study.
Did I have you down for... Did I put down everything?
Yeah.
We have that one?
Which one?
Everything? I don't know if we could put that one down.
No.
Okay, next. The film that has no female nudity, but male nudity, apparently, which is the dismay for everybody. Baywatch, budget of $69 million. Jeffrey Paul, how much
okay,
did we
we're
have?
All over the map on this one. Vincent James, $116 million.
He is the epitome of optimism.
Well, listen, I'm not too far behind. I went 110.
You dummies.
And you went 43.
Wow, I was still overshot, but I win. 23.1.
Okay.
A bomb.
Why make a movie anymore?
Don't start crowing about it. You're 20 million off.
And you were 80 million off.
I admit it, though. I'm not crowing about it.
I'm not crowing either. It's a win. It's a soft win.
I won.
Shut up with your Texas Rangers gay bracelet. All right. Pirates of the Caribbean, the fourth sequel in that franchise. I had no desire to see a budget of $230 million.
Yo, ho, ho.
We're all very close here.
Okay.
Okay. Vincent, again, is the high guy.
185 for him, right?
No. He went 82.
Okay.
You went 78.
Uh-huh.
Then I go 75.
You cock. You take this one. $62.9 million for the Pirates. Colossal bomb. Well, domestically, I don't know what it did for the world.
How is
you guys all overshot it.
I know.
Well, come on. It's a big
Memorial Day weekend.
I love Disney. I love the product, but no one's going to movies anymore.
If it's good, not true.
When we get to the last one.
Okay.
Two more.
Twice a year.
Captain Underpants.
Yes, that's the next one I have. I couldn't find the budget on that one. Actual retail prices. Jeffrey Paul, give us the numbers.
Okay. So Vinny went $24 million.
Okay.
You went 19.
Uh-huh.
And I think I priced right you and went 18.
Vinny James fucking pulls us right out and gets both showcases. $23.5 million.
Oh, he almost nailed that. See, he gets a circle for that one.
Circle gets a square. He was
close.
Asterisk.
Yeah. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Now, this is the big movie.
Now, this is where you're going to jump in. This is a well, this is a kind of a big weekend. We've got three this weekend. Okay,
no, we had one more for that.
Which I don't know.
We didn't do Wonder Woman.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Okay, budget of $149. Jeffrey Paul, what did Wonder Woman bring in week one?
Okay, so you were the high guy there at 68.
Uh huh.
Okay. Now I know this did unbelievable box office. No,
it did.
We didn't.
It
see
didn't
it
do unbelievable. Really? Well, it did very well, but not as well as a Marvel or DC film. Well,
I'm curious.
But it's historic because it's the biggest box office opening for by a woman director. Yeah. So you have Kevin with 68.
Right.
Vinnie James at 63. And I thought no one would give a shit about it because, you know, who fucking cares about Wonder Woman, you know, unless she's naked? 39.
Yeah. $100 million.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Which
good
is
for
good.
Them.
Yeah. Well, DC right. films have been shit, though, as we all know.
I heard the reviews on this is pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard mixed on with people I know. They said it's 50-50 on that.
All right, Tom.
Here we go, now, Tom. Now so you got the idea of the game. Here we go.
He just smiled. He's so excited.
He is.
I am. Well, because you don't understand how detached from like this kind of pop culture I am. I'm a father of three who works full time. Other than kids' movies.
Join the parade, buddy.
Yeah. I'm leading the parade, pal.
You are. You're the drum major. Or the what's that called? The major ed? The
major
one in the front?
Yep. Right. I have a baton.
Okay, first film, and I'll give you a synopsis if I have it, and I'll give you the budget if I have it. This one's called It Comes at Night. Riley Keough is one of the stars, and that just goes to show
you. Is this M. Night Shyamalan?
No, it is not.
You heard Night.
Yeah. A man hiding with his family after an apocalypse is seeking shelter. Another family comes to seek shelter, and problems arise.
Sounds like an M. Night Shyamalan synopsis.
True.
But
let's go to our guest, Tom Rome. Tom, how much do you think it's going to make opening weekend?
What was the budget again?
I didn't have a budget on this
probably,
one.
Probably $22 million.
What is it called?
It comes at night.
It's a suspense thriller.
I would say so.
Adults only. 23, Don Mattingly. Let's do it.
Oh, baby. Jeffrey Paul, what do you have?
I'm going to go a little bit lower.
Okay.
I'm going to say 14.
You're both way off. This is going to be $5 million opening weekend for this film.
You might be right.
I have never seen a preview for this. I have not seen any billboard advertising.
No, I did. I sat through. It's the one of the one trailer I sat through on a Facebook feed.
There you go.
So I'm like plugged in.
It has a good premise, actually.
It's a good trailer. Check out the trailer.
Yeah, go check.
Noted.
But I did overbid.
Next film. It's called Megan Levy. Kate Mara, Bradley Whitford. Kate Mara is a female soldier, and
Megan
she's in the
Levy's
war.
The name of it?
Yeah, it's an autobiographical film. She's a female soldier. True story. Mikey. No, true story.
I saw the trailer for this.
And her bomb sniffing dog go through the war, and they get blown up together. The dog couldn't sniff a bomb that was like 10 feet below.
Right.
They both get blown up, and they have to go on the men together.
Oof.
Yeah.
Let's go to Jeffrey Paul first. What do you have for me, buddy? Megan Levy.
Seven.
Tom Rome. Megan Levy. Kate Mara. Willing to marry his granddaughter.
Jolton Joe DiMaggio. Fiverr.
In my seats, okay? I have the best seats in Yankee Stadium, okay? I'm going to go with $13 million.
All your star. Okay.
Yeah, a star, okay.
Tom?
Back after this. He said eight, right? No,
five.
He said five.
Joe DiMaggio.
I have 13. I think this is going to go by the wayside. The big one this weekend, Mr. Box Office Money in the Bank himself. He gets my money 75% of the time, but will he get it this week? Tom Cruise in The Mummy.
I want to see
budget of $125.
I think
is
it's
this a
be
Brandon Fraser reboot?
Yes.
Like, it's
or
of
Brandon
that
Fraser? No, I think it's a
Fraser,
reboot, but a new take on it. It's a female mummy.
It looks fucking great.
And Tom Cruise is in it.
Yeah, he is. The effects
Tom
look
Cruise
amazing.
In it.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise.
And Russell Crowe, I believe, is in this as well.
Oh, yeah.
Leave me alone.
Leave me alone.
Why me?
Budget 125.
Start us off.
Nope, because I write mine down, unlike you cheater.
125, Tom Cruise. 73.
Motherfucker. I had 74 written down.
Oh, really?
Right here.
Really? Oh, well, I'm a rookie.
Jeffrey Paul?
It's opening this week?
Yep. 3 days.
I'm going to say 68.
All right, you got a low ball a little bit. All right, I think we're all in the same ballpark here.
I think it's going to be good. I don't know if it's going to be amazingly good, you know, as far as box office, but it's definitely a movie I want to check out.
I'll see it if the reviews are great. Like, again, Tom Cruise, 75% of the time gets my money. Yeah. This one, I'm like,
effects look great.
Yeah.
I want a story. So I want the effect. Cool. The effects do look great, but I want a story. And I'm like,
I mean, it's the Mummy story. So, I mean, how can you fuck it up? I mean, you have to do something. How could you
fuck up Star Wars and Indiana Jones? But somehow they managed to do that.
They fucked up the Wolfman with Benicio del Toro.
That's terrible. I don't watch Star Wars.
Oh, no.
Of course not. Of course not. Right? It's fun. That's why the Muppets. Oh my god!
We've been through this a million times. I'm not a nerd.
I'm not a nerd, but I've got a bracelet on like a Texas Ranger.
Yeah.
Back after this,
I'm
Jeffrey Paul. We only got a few minutes. You can't even pontificate all fucking day long.
Okay.
Next film we have.
What's that, corporate America?
47. Hey, listen, that's what pays the bills until this fucking show takes off.
Okay. 47. You'll be in corporate America forever.
No, I won't. 47 meters down. All right.
The scuba gear goes bad?
Close!
Yeah, I know that one.
Mandy Moore and Matthew Modine are cage divers, and their scuba
Modine
gear.
Is still making movies?
We got a few minutes here.
Vision Quest.
Shut up.
How long ago was that?
Yeah, 84.
That was a Madonna song in that movie.
Mandy Moore, Matthew Modine are cage divers where their equipment falls out 47 meters down, and they're surrounded by great whites as they are stuck 47 meters down.
We get it.
With their hand in a rock that they have to saw apart.
By the way, they did change.
And Jane Franco makes a guest appearance in it.
They changed the title of this to 47 meters down. I saw in the Wikipedia. Let's go fast here. These chicken nuggets smell amazing. Jeffrey Paul, give me a number. 47 meters. Mandy Moore, Matthew Modine. Do they have the box office power?
No.
No one cares. I'm gonna say 6 million.
Six.
Six.
Yep.
That changes mine. I'm gonna go.
Don't let it change yours. No. Be a fucking lead or not a sheep.
You're right. I'll go Winfield, 31.
Wow, that is egregious. I go 12. I don't have much faith in this either. Next up, the Tupac Shakur biography, All Eyes on Me. Budget of $45 million, by the way.
What do you think about that one, George?
With a bunch of no names in it, by the way.
Are you a big Tupac guy?
That'll probably make $50 million. Oh, 100 million.
Really?
Opening weekend? Opening weekend?
Opening weekend, 80 million.
Not even close.
Does the hood come out to a movie?
A lot of hip hop.
They'll buy it on the black market. So
nah, they'll come out to a Tupac movie.
Okay.
They bring their kids. They bring their kids to the movies.
At midnight. They do. Straight Outta Compton was a box office success. Remember that. So we're going to go that. Let's get some numbers here. $45 million budget. Tom Rome, go.
71.
Egregious.
It is. I don't know what's going on.
Jeffrey Paul, number. Choking. Not a choke.
It'll bring something. It'll bring something. There's definitely an audience for it. I'm going to say 31.
Fuck you. I got 31 written down right here. Yep, Jason C. warning this. Or Mike Piazza.
I said it before. I didn't even look at your dumb.
I know you didn't.
Okay.
We've got two more. We'll go for the big one here. Disney. This is right up your alley, Tom.
Yeah, let's do it.
Cars 3. Owen Wilson.
2 is so disappointing.
Larry the Cable Guy. Yuck. This is one of the very few Pixar films I have not seen. I love Pixar films.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any
Cars of the franchise.
The first one was great.
I didn't see them.
I've seen none of the Fast and Furious.
Now you have to talk.
But again, when my son was of the age,
guys, we got to get going here. Get numbers.
Cars.
I don't have a budget on this. Give me a number.
20. Posada.
20 million for Cars? You're going to think it's going to bomb.
No, I think 120 million.
No. Well, let's find out. Jeffrey Paul, what do you got?
It's a third in this trilogy.
It's going to be okay. I'm going to say 43.
See, I think it's going to be more, but not as much as Joy. I say 83, and I think I might have overshot this.
Yeah, I think you overshot
it. I do. Last one. This one's called Rough Night. Scarlett Johansson, Kate McKinnon. We're going to call this one.
This looks like shit.
We're going to call this the female Very Bad Things.
This looks terrible.
They're on a bachelorette party and they kill a male stripper. I mean, it's the same exact fucking plot as Very Bad Things, which was not very good, by the way. That was horrible. Very Bad Things was a piece of shit.
The Commerce Comet, Mickey Mantle.
Yes. You're going to give that one 7, huh?
7.
Jeffrey Paul, give me a number.
Scott Star Power. I think it's going to open up to a little bit better than 7, but I think it's going to have awful reviews. I'm going to go 15.
I got 11 for Chuck Knobloch. We're going to get out of here in about 2 seconds. Let's go around the room for some plugs. Thomas Rome, where can we find you?
I am going to be at Gotham, at the Underground at Gotham on June 20th with Ken Krantz. And it's a big privilege. Ritu.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't wait. It's my first city gig in a long time.
What time?
And it's a 7:30 sit down, 8 o'clock show. And like I said, I'm really jazzed to be a part of it.
Oh, sweet.
Good show. Jeff Paul, June 20th, Gotham, 7 p.m. see you there.
Okay.
In the downstairs.
Yeah,
downstairs.
We'll go for stuff for this week. So this week, Black Cat at 8 p.m. in the Lower East Side. Then on Saturday, June 10th, 10 o'clock show here. And then I'm hosting the 11 o'clock at Broadway as well. And then, guys, keep an eye out. Comedy Under the Stars starts starts June 22nd.
That's outdoor?
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Under the Stars.
Hence the name.
Yeah. And as our opening headliner, we have Chris Monty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, good headliner.
June 9th, I'll be right back here at Broadway Comedy Club this Friday at 7 p.m. I'll be Thursday night at the Yankee game with my brother getting shit-faced. Saturday, I'll be in Staten Island for a couple podcasts and the John Kirshner Public Access debut show.
The Kirsch.
And last but not least, let's not forget we're right in the middle, actually toward the end of season 4 of Comics Watching Comics. You can find it at comicswatchingcomics.com. Big announcement coming next few weeks for Comics Watching Comics. Kids, see you soon. Kevin Goatee, Jeffrey Paul, thank you. Tom Rump for coming out. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank
later.
You guys.